Welcome to Mastering Your 30s, a podcast to guide women in their 30s about how to relax, enjoy the ride, and make investments for their future health, wealth, and well-being, and for women beyond their 30s to share their wisdom and experience with others. I am Alev Bakan, health and nutrition coach and founder of Health & Co. My guest today is Epiphany Jordan. Epiphany is an entrepreneur and touch advocate who has dedicated her career to exploring the transformative power of non-sexual nurturing touch. In our conversation, we delved into the various ways touch deprivation affects different groups of people, such as singles, men, the elderly, and disabled individuals. Epiphany's passion for this topic is truly inspiring, and she shared some compelling stories and personal experiences that highlight just how vital touch is for our mental and physical well-being. One of the most eye-opening parts of our chat was discussing the challenges of forming meaningful friendships, especially as we get older or live in big cities where social interactions can be fleeting. Epiphany also spoke candidly about her own life transitions, including moving to a new city and reshaping her beliefs and about relationships. We explored the cultural differences in attitudes toward touch, the importance of teaching consent, and practical tips on how to incorporate more touch into our daily lives to foster deeper connections. This conversation left me with a renewed appreciation for the simple yet profound impact of human touch. Epiphany will also be speaking at the Sacramento Goddess Festival in 2024, and she offers coaching services to help people integrate more touch into their lives. Whether you are touch deprived or just curious about the benefits of platonic touch, this episode is packed with valuable insight. So, without further ado, let's dive into my conversation with the wonderful Epiphany Jordan. Hi, Epiphany. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing today? I love that. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for coming. From now on, I'm going to call you Pev. Can you tell us about yourself a little bit?
Oh, boy. Let's see. Such an open-ended question.
Yeah.
I am 60 years old, and I just turned 60. So I've been thinking about that a lot, and you know, what does it mean, and identity. I tend to have lived a fairly interesting life, or so people tell me. I've lived in San Francisco and Portland and Austin, Texas, and I've been a journalist, I've been a professional tarot reader, I've been a legal assistant, I ran a really successful Airbnb in Austin for 10 years. I've always been the kind of person who makes money in a lot of different ways.
Nice.
Which is, yeah, it's been a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. And the thing that brought you and I together on the show that I'd love to talk about is about 10 years ago, I started a business in Austin called Karuna Sessions, which was kind of a ritual of human connection that was focused on non-sexual touch. And I got really obsessed with this topic of human touch, about especially non-sexual touch, and started researching it in a bunch of different ways. A while into the about 5 or 6 years into my business, I realized that a lot of the people who needed it the most could afford it the least, because it had luxury pricing. And so I ended up writing a book called Somebody Hold Me, The Single Person's Guide to Nurturing Human Touch. to teach people who weren't in a romantic relationship how to get their touch needs met. And I had to shut down my business during the pandemic because, you know, being super close to people and breathing on them was not really a good idea with a respiratory virus. And something I'd been thinking about for quite a while was creating public health programs that use touch as a wellness practice. And so I started applying for grad schools. I was accepted to start in 2021 at the University of South Florida. And I didn't really have any experience with healthcare or public health or math or science or anything. And I was fortunate enough to be in a program that had, it was kind of focused on doing marketing around public health, you know, because, you know, when you're trying to break somebody's bad habit, you know, something like you're trying to get people to quit smoking, the tobacco companies spend millions and millions and billions of dollars every year on marketing. But the people who are the public health departments and, you know, places that are trying to quit smoke and get you to quit aren't really coming at it from a marketing angle. So anyways, I had said in my statement of purpose for grad school that I was interested in rebranding Human Touch. And that is exactly what my faculty advisor asked me to do. And so that's kind of been my thing that I've been working toward and on since I finished grad school, is talking about this concept with people and, you know, trying to get them to think about touch in different ways, because the way we think about it now isn't really working for most of us.
Oh my God.
Yeah,
well,
it's a lot.
You've done so much, but also I think what you are now trying to do is so important and also like very underestimated, maybe, right? We always take touch like human touch for granted, and also we don't know we miss it until we miss it. What I don't want to generalize thing, and I know like every human being is unique, but is there a common aspect of people who you see like as missing that personal touch, who is missing that in their life?
Yeah, that's a great question. A lot of us are, you know, there's a great number of us, and, you know, you'd be surprised. It could be people who are young or old. Mm-hmm. It could be people who are single, people who are married a lot of times don't get as much touch as they want. You know, we think that if we get married, we're going to end up getting as much touch as we want. And a lot of times that doesn't happen. Men are very touch deprived. If they're not in a romantic relationship, I mean, I hear about men who the only time they have another person touch them is like when they go to their doctor or they're getting a haircut or something. I mean, it's a lot. You know, women tend to be more touchy-feely with their friends. You know, it's more acceptable to hug hello or goodbye. Elderly people, I mean, if you go into a retirement home and start holding people's hands, it's like it's just so transformative. That's another group. Disabled folks, homeless people definitely don't, you know, people avoid them. They're kind of our modern day lepers, right? You know, people avoid talking to them, but they really avoid touching them. Who else? That covers a lot. A lot of humans. And you know, it's like you were saying, it's such an individual thing. It's affected by our upbringing, our gender, how we were raised, what we do for work, religion, the culture we were raised in. You know, if you leave the country, you know, like countries in the Middle East, it's very common to see men walking down the street holding hands with each other.
Yes.
With their arms around each other.
Yes. I'm originally from Turkey. So in Turkey,
you
see people like, you know, two men like putting their hands on their shoulder, walking like that, you know. So it's very common.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm curious, since you have more direct experience with it than I do, why do you think it's more acceptable for men in Middle Eastern cultures than it is in the United States? I mean, we used to see photographs of men, you know, like from 100 years ago, where they'd be sitting on each other's laps and, you know, they'd have their arms around each other and they'd be so affectionate. And it's sad that we've lost that. I think it's really hard on them. So what is it in the Middle East that makes men do that?
I cannot like talk like for a, like a cultural position, like as an expert, but like, I think, we are more like a tribal community, like the tribal culture. And I think the US culture is more individualistic. So everybody has their own territory, physical and mental. But for example, in Turkey, if you live in a like very traditional Turkish family, everybody is on each other's business too. You know,
when
you talk about personal space, like mental and physical, it's a little bit impossible. Everybody has idea about everybody else's business. And we kiss each other when we get into the house. We kiss each other when we say goodbye. Like, we hold hands, we tap on our shoulders. So we are like very touchy-feely community too, both mental and physical. And so I think they are a little bit connected. I'm sure you know, I of course you know better than me, but I think the mental connectedness is very like going very parallel with the physical connectedness. I think so.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're right on track. People who are touch starved can be paranoid and angry, and their bodies hurt, and they don't sleep well, and you know, they're distrustful of people. There's a reason that we punish people like that. You know, when we put them in solitary confinement, they're not getting any human contact, any physical human contact. It's really, you know, and again, like I was talking about, like with retirement homes with elderly people, you know, or a lot of times, like, you know, if you're sick, the touch that you're getting is not super comfortable, you know, where they're poking you and they're prodding you and they're moving your body around, and, you know, you don't feel good to begin with. And, you know, there's it doesn't feel really tender or caring, or you know, I mean, let's not even talk about like pap smears. I mean, like, you know, but there's lots of stuff, you know, like having your blood drawn is you know, so it's not fun. I mean, it's funny, I have a lot of tattoos, but I almost faint every time my blood gets, I get a blood work done. So
I think they symbolize different things. So I think, you know, like with blood taking out, like you always have the possibility to hear something bad about it. Like, you know, it's like going to an exam, you know, what the result gonna be. But with the tattoo, it's your choice. You made the decision, and you, like, hopefully, you know that it's gonna be something beautiful that you are proud of having.
Yeah, exactly. But exactly.
So we pretty much know that the crowd around you doesn't mean that you will have that many touch, that many quality touch. Physical.
Yeah.
So we know that, right? So even though maybe you have lots of friends, you are married, you are in a very crowded home with lots of kids, family around and everything, it doesn't mean that you are satisfied with your touch quota.
Yeah.
Quality.
With how much you're getting touched, and what kind of touch you're getting. Yeah.
So how do we know we are craving for this? Is it like an urge? Or is it like a mental demand that we have? How do we realize that?
I mean, a lot of times, you know, some people are really aware of it. There's a lot of people who aren't aware that it's going on until maybe they like see a friend and they get a really good hug and they're like, wow, that feels really good. Something I find a lot, you know, and especially like we're talking about the really individualistic culture that we have in the United States, you know, it's like people will just be like, oh, I don't need that. I don't need anything. You know, they'll try to justify and convince themselves that they're really okay, you know, and then they do get it when they're just like, you know, breaking down in tears, or, you know, they feel this deep sense of longing for it. I mean, when you think about it, it's like that all humans, you know, if they're lucky, unless you were born in a Romanian orphanage, but it's like, or, you know, you started your life there. It's like we all start our lives, you know, being held in our parents' arms or our grandparents or aunts, uncles, older brothers and sisters. You know, so it's like this is, and if you don't get touched like that when you're young, it mess you up for your entire life. There's a lot of, like, especially like the first 6 to 18 months are crucial, because when we're born, our brains aren't fully developed, and touch is one of the things that helps them develop, especially around emotional regulation and attachment style. So it's like you see kids who are raised with a lot of touch, and they're, you know, as they become adults, they're very, you know, they're very calm and grounded, and, you know, they're better adjusted. They're better at having relationships with other people. But then, you know, when you don't have that, you know, what, like, you know, I talk, it's amazing. I talk to people all the time who are like, I don't really like touch. Can you tell me how I can be more comfortable with it? Because everybody else seems to really enjoy it and I want it. You know, sometimes I run across people like that, but, yeah, I think I think it's a physical longing. It's a physical, it's emotional. I mean, it's fairly central to the human experience. You know, it's like when we started out as a species, as, you know, when we were living in caves, we all slept in big piles for warmth and safety. You know, it's like if you weren't physically close to your tribe, to your clan, it you would be dead. You know, you were in great danger. And so I think, you know, it's like people may notice that there are really physically, you know, like their shoulders are up, you know, around their ears, and, you know, they're really tense and they're stressed, and you know, sometimes exercise helps, or massage or meditation or something. But
and massage is another way of touch too, like, you know, you see,
it is, it definitely is. Yeah. It can be pretty clinical though, it really can, you know, where you know, it's like working on the muscles underneath and not so focused on the skin. And again, I don't know, like, if you've ever had a Thai massage, but it's so painful. It's really, really, really painful. You know, so it feels good afterwards, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's not the same as like somebody, you know, gently and tenderly running their hand down your face. You know, I'm not saying that the kind of touch that I'm talking about is better than massage, but
No.
Them have their...
It feeds another level.
Yeah. You know? I've talked to a lot of massage therapists who are like, yeah, I have clients who they come in to get a massage, but I know that that's not what they really need, that they need to be held. And not that the massage therapists are doing that, because that's, you know, that's not outside of regulations and, you know, the container that you create with a massage. But yeah, I mean, actually when I had my business, like we had a few massage therapists come in and get sessions from us, you know, because they're giving touch all the time and they're not necessarily getting
Okay, so let's imagine a a mom, or like very busy mom in her 30s, like running around and mostly giving hugs to her children and everything, because children, they like to be hugged until a certain age, I think. And then they are like, no way.
Get away. Don't let my friends see you, mom.
My son is 12. I think we are getting to that stage. Not yet, but I'm preparing myself for that stage.
Oh, I'm so worried. I will say, though, that I have several friends who, when their sons were teenagers, they loved their moms so much. They were always hugging them in public. It was so sweet to see.
Well, we have at least one hug rule. We still have it, you know, like, because I think I love hugging my children, of course, all moms do. So every day we at least get one hug from each other. So
that's so sweet. Like when he's leaving for school or something.
Yeah. So I'm like, give me my hug for the day, at least. If sometimes he's tired, busy, or doesn't like something I do. So he's like, that's the only hug I have for the day, but still one hug per day is my best.
That you're getting more than a lot of people. That's yeah. I'm sure.
So. But let's say that a mom with kids, you know, giving hugs to the kids, but doesn't receiving that maybe hug from the husband, or like, mm-hmm. you know, that maybe more adult hug kind of.
Yeah.
How can she ask for it? Like, what do you provide a solution to initiate that?
It's funny that you ask that, because I'm thinking about writing a second book about non-sexual touch for couples, because I when I was doing research for my project in school, I interviewed single women, and I had a woman asked me if I was interested in interviewing her. And she was married and dealing with this with her husband. I think that it's a good idea to talk about it, you know, when you're not in bed, mm-hmm. and to, you know, you could just ask for it, you know, just be like, you know, something like, you know, I've had a really rough day, would you mind just you know, hold it, you know, putting your hands on my head, or you know, holding hands with me, or rubbing my feet, or you know, just asking for something. I think it's also really great to make it so that it's very clear that one person's giving and receiving. You know, some activities, like when you hug, it's a mutual thing.
Mutual thing,
you know,
yeah.
Where you're doing it together. But, you know, you can do stuff where, like you set a timer for 3 minutes and, you know, the one person lays there and the other person just puts their hands on them. You know, maybe they move, maybe they stroke, maybe they just hold still. And then you switch off. You know, so that you get this idea of that, that giving and receiving can be two separate things.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And that you can do it. The other thing that's great about that is that you can do it without this idea of, okay, well, if I'm hugging you, it means that I want to have sex or something, you know, or then there's that expectation. So, you know, if there's this expectation of, you're just going to lie here and receive, and then we're going to switch. You know, it helps to kind of take it out of that sexual continuum, because, you know, our primary thing that we think about with touch is that, especially between adults, is that you touch people that you're going to have sex with, or that you want to have sex with, or that you are having sex with. You know, it's like there's this paradigm that touch equals sex. And you know, when you're married, then, you know, that happens too. I mean, there are couples out there who, you know, for whatever reason, they stop having sex. And then it's like all the touch disappears as well, because, you know, if your partner goes to hug you and you're like, oh, that means they want to have sex with me, then it's like you push them away.
Yeah.
So I think realizing, you know, maybe having a conversation about this concept that sex doesn't that touch doesn't have to be about sex, that it can be for relaxation or for stress relief or for grieving or trauma, or, you know, all these different, for respite, you know, if you've been working really hard and you're stressed out, you know, for calming our nervous systems, you know, then we can use it in this way, that's something that is possible to do. And I would say to give it some time, because people have to go through a lot of mental stuff. You know, even if you've been partnered with somebody or married to them for a long time, you know, it's like they may have something that had happened to them when they were younger that they've never talked to you about, or, you know, they may have had some unpleasant experience that's turned them off from this concept. Or, you know, especially I think for men, it's like, you know, that level of caregiving we associate with vulnerability, and, you know, and men don't, you know, a lot of times men don't like to be vulnerable because it's seen as a weakness, you know, even with the partner that you love. And so, you know, it may take time to get to that point, but I think it's also really important because, you know, you're talking about hugging your kids, but also when they're young, it's like, a lot of times they're grabbing at you all the time. It's like they're touching you because they want something, you know. I guess it's similar to, you know, being touched by a partner who's wanting sex. You know, and this happens with same sex couples too. I had some friends, a lesbian couple, who the one woman really wanted non-sexual touch, and her partner was just like, touches about sex. And so it's something that people struggle with. I think that's actually a really important point, that it's, you know, we all think that, you know, we should be able to, that getting all the touch we want and need should be easy. But, you know, even though we're struggling with it in our individual ways, you know, there's so many people who are going through the same thing. You know, it's like we're going through the same thing, but we're going through it alone, you know, so we think we're the only one because we're not talking about it. So if it's weird, if it's awkward, if it's hard, if it's difficult, you know, if you have to have a lot of conversations about it, that's actually really normal. And you're doing better than a lot of people who just ignore it and power struggle over it. Yeah.
Of course, communication is the key. And even like you start by a little way, like a little bit communication is better than not communicating at all. So, But do you provide coaching services now?
Well, I don't have it. I need to write up some copy and put it on my website. But when I, as part of my MPH program, when I was getting my master's, I was able to get trained as a health and wellness coach. And I love doing coaching with people around this topic because, you know, people don't have anybody to talk to about it. And also, I mean, people actually a lot of times have a lot more resources than they know and a lot more ideas. It's like we just don't have the vocabulary. I would equate it, I love metaphors, and it's like a room in your house that you didn't even know exists, but then you go in there and you're like, oh wow, look, I have all this space to, you know, make art, or to, you know, more closet space, or I can put another bedroom in there, you know. It's like, but you know, and it's like we have these resources, but we just don't know how to access them. So yeah,
I see.
Yeah, the coaching is really fun and can be really helpful.
And it can also, it is also online coaching, right? Like they can reach out.
Yeah,
online.
Absolutely.
You don't have to be come and you don't touch that.
No. I mean, it's fun to do stuff in person, you know,
of course,
because then you can like play with, you know, types of touch or different things, you know. I mean, people don't even know, you know, it's like, if you talk about platonic touch, you know, it's like, you can think about like holding hands or hugging, but there's so much other stuff that you can do that people are like, wow, that counts, you know, like just somebody putting their hand on your shoulder is, you know, or, you know, it's that counts, and it's a lot, and it feels good, and it's a relief to be connected to another person in that way. It's beautiful.
Well, how they can reach out to you, if the people like reach out to our services?
I have a website, which is nurturinghumantouch.com.
Mm-hmm. We are going to follow it on.
Like I said, I need to pop a page up on there about the coaching, because that's kind of a new thing. But there's a contact form there. I've got a little bit. I don't do a lot on Instagram, but I'm on there. People can message me there. It's somebody_hold_me, which was, I started doing it when I wrote the book. Yeah, so I've got a couple pages on Facebook, and you know, if you Google my name, Epiphany Jordan, there'll be all kinds of different stuff that comes up.
And I think some people may come and see you in person. You have an event coming up in the summer of 2024. Just to make sure that maybe if they are listening, like in 2026, I don't want people to be confused.
Like, yeah, it's the weekend of August 17th and 18th in 2024, right at this summer from when we're recording. And it's the Sacramento Goddess Festival. She's done a couple of different goddess festivals, and she's going to be doing them around different places in Central California. This is the first one she's doing in Sacramento. There's going to be all kinds of cool vendors and speakers and activities and food, and just, you know, an opportunity to connect with other women, you know, in kind of a spiritual container. And I'm going to be doing a presentation there on this work around rebranding Human Touch. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah, please come see me. I'm happy to, if you need a big long hug, I got you.
Nice. What about that touch we have with animals, like holding them? I have two dogs, and sometimes, like, I am using them as my therapy ball, you know, holding them, playing with them. Their touch is also very helping me to wind down and, you know, cool down. Can animal touch replace human touch, or it's another and completely different way of nurturing ourselves?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think that our relationships with our animals has really changed a lot over the past 50 years. We're much more, what's the word I want? We have much more intimate relationships with them. You know,
and I think after COVID, it changed it to another level too.
But even before COVID, I mean, I can't remember I'll actually look up the exact number, because I've been trying to quote this the past few days, but in 2018 or 2019, people in the United States spent several million dollars on Valentine's Day gifts for their animals.
Oh my God.
I didn't buy, don't tell my cats, but I didn't buy them a Valentine's Day gift.
Yeah, well, don't tell my
cats. That's for the humans and not for the animals. Pets are wonderful. I have two cats, and this is something I think about a lot, because one of my cats is 17 years old, and I'm surprised she's not on my lap right now. She just always wants to be close to me and cuddle, you know, having me hold her and cuddle her, and, you know, which is amazing, because, you know, it's like, I mean, this desire for touch is not just humans. It's not just pets, it's all mammals, you know. It's like we see it all through, you know, all through the animal kingdom. You know, it's common for mammals to be physically close to each other. The thing, pets are wonderful. It's great to cuddle with them and support them, and get, you know, feel supported and nourished in that way. I would say though that it's not the same thing as humans, because it's like, you know, if I like looked at my cat and I was like, you know, I'm having a really bad day, can I have a hug? And instead she's like biting my hand and, you know, pushing up against my hand because she wants me to pet her. So, you know, it's not as directed, or, you know, it's not so much about I need this or I want this, you know, it can be really one-sided. They can be a little selfish. And there's something that's deeply affirming about having another human being say, I want to touch you, you know, or I want you to touch me, you know, in this way that's tender and caring and nurturing. It's powerful. So I don't want to say pets are bad, because I
know like
quarters, but no, yeah, they're wonderful. And for a lot of people, that's what they have. You know, I mean, something like 40% of Americans are single. They're not living apart together. They're not in any sort of romantic relationship. You know, they're not living together, but not married. I mean, they're just single. So I think for a lot of people, that's what we have. And yes, it can be really calming and grounding, but it's different. It's wonderful and different.
I think
it's not an either or, it's a both and, maybe.
Yes. But at least we know that we cannot say to ourselves that, oh, you know, I'm cuddling with my dogs or with my cats or with my animals, so it's enough for me. So we have to find that other way of touch, like that human touch, and we have to somehow integrate it in our life.
Yeah, it would be great if we could. Great. And yeah. I'd also like to recognize that that's not possible for everybody. You know, and also, but it, and it's also not possible for everybody to have a pet. I mean, if you travel a lot for work, if you can't afford vet bills, I mean,
of course,
oh my god, my vet's gotten so expensive. I don't know what happened, but it's, well, I think vet bills on the West Coast are much more expensive than when I lived in Texas, but you know, people live in buildings where you're not allowed to have pets.
Yeah, they just, of course,
they don't, you know, they're like, for instance, like I would love it. My mother's 83 and I would love it if she got another dog or cat. And she's just like, I can't do it because I don't think she wants to put herself in a position where she has if she dies and she has an elderly animal, and then who takes care of it? And, you know, so there's lots of reasons people can't have pets or don't have pets, but you know, it's certainly better than nothing, and can be really nourishing. I mean, I love to my you know, I wake up in the morning and my cats are on top of me, or you know, cuddled up next to me. You know, it's like it's still pretty cold here at night, so I think they're trying to keep warm, but. Yeah.
That's nice. Yes.
It's not an either or, it's a both and. So.
Yes. Well, you know that I also have three questions for you. What were the breaking points in your 30s that made you change your life or something in yourself?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I was looking at that this morning, and I knew exactly what I was going to tell you.
Oh,
so
right.
I was, it was 2000. I had moved out of San Francisco in 1995. So I guess when I was 31 or so. And I was trying to move back, and it was the height of the dot-com boom. You know, like if people were looking for housemates, they would, you know, there'd be like 200 people who showed, you know, that they were taking applications from. So I was really having a hard time, and I ended up living in a friend's warehouse in West Oakland. It was a pretty rough neighborhood. And the space was great. It was fun because I had, you know, other friends who lived in the building, and it was enjoyable. And one morning I was parking my car on the street because it costs to, you know, park your car inside the big razor wire fence. And one morning I walked out to my car and somebody had broken into my car and literally like taken a knife and hacked my stereo out of the dashboard. And it was, I was just like, that's it. I'm like, I can't live here. I'm like, the universe is telling me to go.
To go.
And so, yeah. And I had been trying to get a foothold back in the Bay Area, you know, with job and housing and all that for about 6 months. And just like, nothing was going right. It just, you know, I was bouncing from place to place and I was really unhappy. And so, I made the conscious choice to leave, and about 8-10 months later, I ended up moving to Austin, Texas, where I lived there for 20 years. I bought a house. I still have my house there, two houses actually. I have a house with a little guest house next to it. And
nice.
It was a really good change. I loved living there. I had a really fun time. You know, I was able to find friends and community and got married and, you know, had property. I lived in the same house for 19 years. It was, nice. You know, nobody could tell me like that I couldn't have pets or what color to paint the walls or anything. So, you know, it was nice. And I totally know that for most, women in their 20s and 30s now that is just not an option because the housing market is horrible. But the stereo thing, like that was my breaking point. It totally changed my life.
Yeah. And I think maybe sometimes we need to like changing location can be also a good thing. Sometimes we think like, is there like a big issue? Of course, it's a big issue, but sometimes if you cannot make it there, you can make it somewhere else and you can still build your community. You can still build your life and maybe that will be better for you. Right. So,
I lived on the West Coast my whole life and it was cool to live in a different part of the country. And Austin's a super fun city. And actually, it's weird because I ended up when I started school, I ended up moving back to my hometown, which I thought I would never do. I'm glad that I'm here. One of the things I'm doing right now is caregiving for my mother who has dementia. Oh. And so I'm grateful that I had a couple years with her before she started really sliding down. It's been such a gift. So yeah.
Yes. Well. So my second question is about one thing you swore by in your 30s that you don't believe in anymore. It can be anything.
Oh boy. Yeah, that's an interesting one. God, when I was in my 30s, I really, really, really wanted a romantic relationship. I really wanted a partner, a husband, something. I mean, I had a couple of relationships over the years, you know, year, two, 3 years there. But, you know, that felt like something that was really missing. And I met my ex-husband when I turned 40, like a week after my 40th birthday. Mm-hmm. And we got married when I was 42 and we got divorced when I was 47. And, you know, it's definitely not the thing that my life revolves around anymore. And I've just kind of given up on it. And, you know, I think especially for women, it's like we really... You know, we really think that there's something wrong with women who aren't married or partnered, or you know that you know we don't have that same standard for men. But you know, it's like, and of course, it's like, there's that urge. You want to be partnered. You want to be supported like that. But, you know, I feel like now I'm able to have a really, really incredible life without having that as a part of my life. So,
yeah, I think this is a very important issue. I think also as a society, we are always pushed to be married, want to be married, and stay married too, you know, like, so don't break your marriage, or like continue stuck with it kind of messages are all around us. So I think it's important that everybody, like we already said, everybody is unique and everybody has their way of living. And sometimes life doesn't serve us what we have in our mind. And it doesn't mean that we failed on our life. So it just, we had this deal and we are dealt with. So we have to play with it.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we're in a big transition right now. You know, there's a lot of people who kind of want what we've had in the past. And then there's something new that's emerging that we're not sure about yet. And romantic relationships is one of the places that's really bearing the brunt. I mean, over the course of time, it's like we've really changed like the definition of marriage, or you know, what a marriage means, or a partnership, or what have you. And it's in a sticky transition right now. It's really a big question. And you know, I think a lot of it is coming about because of other ways that the world is changing, but romantic relationships are kind of getting ground crushed in the middle of all the other, you know, transformations that are happening in the world, you know, in ways big and small, you know, whether that's politics or the environment society, culture, food, you know, there's so many things that it's like things are changing rapidly. Technology.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And my last question is, if your 30-year-old self would be sitting right across you right now, what would you tell her to do or not to do or to be careful with?
Yeah. So I think it's something that I kind of did organically, but I've really noticed in the last few years that it's really paid off. And that is, I've put a lot of energy into my friendships. I have friends that, you know, I've had for, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 years now, you know, people that I've known for a really long time, where even if we don't live in the same city or we haven't talked to each other in months, it's like we can pick up the phone and it's like, you know, 5 minutes ago, you know, there's this deep, really nourishing, connective, supportive thing. It's something I put a lot of energy into, and I'm really glad that I've had. It's I think I've used the word invested. I've invested really heavily in my friendships. This morning I got a text message from somebody who I hadn't talked to in probably about 5 or 6 months. I saw her, we were close friends when I was living in Texas, and she's crazy busy, but you know, it's like, I know she's busy, but you know, we still love each other. And you know, it's like, it's just instantaneous. And I feel like as somebody who's doesn't have a partner, a romantic partner, that's what is going to sustain me into my old age and, you know, keep me fresh. I've actually really enjoyed over the past couple years, I've gotten a lot of friends who are younger than me. I mean, when I lived in Texas, like I had some friends who were younger than me, like 10 or 15 years younger than me, but like I have friends now in their 20s and 30s, and oh my God, they're fantastic. They're so smart and together. I was like, damn, why couldn't I have been like that when I was 27? And they're fun to hang around, and we have such a good time. And you know, having friends of all ages and all genders, and you know, different levels of intimacy is really, you know, creating that sort of community for yourself is priceless. And yeah, I would tell my 30-year-old friend to you know, continue on that path, you know, to be a good friend and have good friends. So
yeah, because sometimes, you know, also when you are in a marriage or in a partnership and you have kids and you are busy, you, the first thing you gave up on is your friends, you know, like you or some your children's friends, family become your like the people that you see mostly, right. But I think, you know, nurturing, like you said, even like a little text message, like keeping up with your friends, it's very important. Yeah. And sometimes the friendship are so deep and connected that even though you don't keep in touch, like you said, like a little hello, even after a couple of years later, can reconnect you right away. And I think that's the quality of the, not the quantity, but the quality of the relationship, right?
Yeah, I'm actually thinking, I have one friend that I'm really close to that we call each other our platonic trophy wives.
She's
beautiful and she's smart and she's very accomplished at her job and she makes a lot of money, and damn, I'm lucky to get to hang out with her. She's amazing.
Yeah, that's the best, I think, you know.
It really is.
Well, this was a great conversation.
Thank you.
I am sure that people who are listening will have that taste of good conversation too, but I feel very lucky to have you. And
yeah, thank you so much for having me. This was a super fun way to spend my Friday morning.
Well, maybe we will have you again when you have your second book about like that.
I know, actually. Okay, so there's a vote for that. Yeah, I've been trying to figure out. I've got like 20 different things that I could do around the topic of touch, and I'm like, the book seems like it would be a good one because it's an issue for people. It definitely is.
It's a big issue. I think it's a big issue, not just because don't want to touch each other, but they somehow in that continuous like of doing things and like taking care of things, they are forgetting that it's if it's not on the to-do list, people forget to do it sometimes, you know, when you are in a relationship. So I think you can be the guide on how to bring back personal touch, you know, like to the pages, to the relationships.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's so good, and it's something that I think we're gonna, you know, as the world gets increasingly complicated and stressful and difficult to navigate, and it's gonna be so important that we take care of each other in that way.
Yes.
And for married couples, but also for friends,
For friends. Yeah.
This is something that's important. I think it becomes even more important if you don't have a partner. I mean, a lot of times, you know, even though couples aren't touching, you know, they'll still like sleep in the same bed and curled around each other at night. Sometimes, not always, but you know, it's like, if you can work through that, you know that you have somebody that you can reach out to. But when you're single, it's a lot more difficult. So yeah,
so if you are not single, or if you have even a friend around, like one tip for today, if you are listening this episode, go touch your friend, like, or like your
ask him for a hug, you know, say, I've heard that if you hug somebody for 20 seconds, it's more powerful, you know, and better for your health. And see if they're open to it. If they're not, don't push them. And,
of course,
you know, we haven't really talked about the consent part of this whole conversation. It's super, super important. But, you know, it's like find somebody else. You know, it's like people are embarrassed by this subject. They're embarrassed to talk about it. And you'd be really surprised when you start bringing it up. People are like, oh, yeah, I didn't know. I was feeling that way, too. I had no idea that I was the only one. So, yeah, it's really worth it. When I was doing my research, I formulated these stories to read to people. And one of the stories was about a woman who had recently gotten divorced. She was hanging out with a group of friends and in the park, and she was like, you know, can we all like cuddle up? And every person that I read that story to commented on, wow, that woman was really, really brave.
It's very
brave. Vulnerable and bring it up. So, you know, fortune favors the bold. I think that, you know, like they're hard conversations to have. They're weird. They're awkward. And they're weird and awkward because we don't talk about it. But I also, I think it's really rewarding. I mean, whether it results in getting more touch or not, it's like at least you learn how to have those conversations.
Conversation. Yeah.
It's important.
Well, maybe it's a sign for us to have another recording about the consent part of it.
I'm happy to.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Thank you. It was a great conversation. We learned a lot. I learned a lot. And I'm sure people who are listening learned a lot too. So thank you so much.
You are so welcome. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Do you believe you or somebody you know can be a great guest for this podcast? Please fill out our guest form at www.masteringyour30s.com. You can also check our website for announcements for my 30 Club membership or leave us any suggestions you may have about our next episodes. Listen to the new episode of Mastering Your 30s wherever you listen to your podcast. Until next time, be good to yourself.